Thanks, Scott. It is both categorically unfair to have to follow John and Lori and have an intro comparing me to Marie Howe. Like, you've set a standard that is now unreachable, so everyone's going to head and lower those expectations, okay? Just drop them down a bit. Anyway, thank you, Joan and Jimmy, Scott, and shout out to Chris, the new dad. I am very happy to be here. I feel like I graduated. I always wanted to do the Hemingway finale, and I'm finally here. I know, right? So I'm going to read a couple new poems that I wrote and a couple from a book that, not the one Scott talked about, and I'll get into why. So this first one's called Maybe the World Has Decided to Lose Its Mind. The same company that cloned Dolly the sheep has successfully cloned a primate, but they assure us that the process is still a long way from producing human babies, even if it were ethically permissible. And you take comfort in the term ethically permissible, because you don't want to think about row after row of small cribs in a science center somewhere. You do not want to think about what they would do to those babies, especially if they were brown. You do not want to think of what they could do if they didn't see those babies as babies and didn't see people as people, and what could happen when corporations got involved. You close your eyes. This all feels too much like science fiction, except the police are executing black people in the streets and they are locking kids in cages. They are selling up our democracy piece by piece for their own gains as they watch us tear each other apart. So maybe it isn't too much of a stretch. Maybe the end times are here. Maybe the world has decided to lose its mind. Maybe we are past the point of going high when they go low. You're not sure, but you will lock your door at night and check it again before dawn. You will try to keep what you love on this side of the door for just a few more hours. Outside, they're shifting the goalposts yet again. By morning, you will wake in a world you don't recognize, far from the one you wish you could remember. This is called Me Too and You Too. He says he didn't know or understand. He didn't mean to do anything wrong. And when he walked her back to the couch, poured more wine, and tried again, having just failed to fuck her. I think about that party in college. Him so witty and charming, following me from room to room. Me flirting back because it was fun and I liked him, but I wasn't gonna fuck him. His anger frothy like the beer foam when by the end of the night he realized this was not going to end the way he wanted. Spewing at me that he put in all this work, realizing then that I was a thing to be overcome. That the dance I thought we were both doing, the one I hoped would end in plans for coffee the next day or a movie, was in fact not a dance at all, but a simple hunt. This is the way we are raised. Women demur, men pursue. Think of Han and Leia. The lessons have always been there. This is what we talk about when we talk about rape culture, but all men hear is rape and not culture. And they think of it as a cartoon scary man in the bushes, not themselves. Not themselves pouring wine and pushing for sex, thinking every kiss will lead there. Like those who claim there is no climate change because it isn't cold, which means there's no global warming. The subtlety is lost in the context. Because the lesson that has been taught over and over and over again, to just keep pushing back. Remember, just because it wasn't violent doesn't mean it wasn't a violation. So thank you, Scott, for mentioning that new book, which I really like, I do, but I wasn't gonna read from it because the world is a shit show. So a couple years ago, I work at the Brooklyn Public Library, and I found a book called, it was a series of books. One was called, they called Culture Shock. And the whole purpose of the books is to acclimate new immigrants to the country that they moved to. And I found the one about America, and oh boy, was that an insight. Because it's an entire book written about what it's like to live in America as an immigrant and what to expect. So I took a bunch of the lines from that book to use as titles, and I wrote a book called How to Be an American. So I'm going to read a couple poems from here. Not that one, though. So the first one is, the blonde American woman is an international preference. Waiting in the doctor's office, they're blaring the television. It's a show that used to just be a website, but now basically consists of a bunch of people sitting around trashing celebrities. When the blonde stands up, flat tummy, hard, high tits, in her USA t-shirt and tells a story about being in Egypt to see, you know, those pyramid houses? Except there are all these angry women, she says, and, you know, hot in their hijabis or whatever. The rest of the audience chuckles because she's blind and cute and American and she doesn't need to say things right. So she tells us, I put on my bikini. Here the scene flashes to the blonde donning her stars and stripes bikini, the stripes barely covering anything and the stars even less. She says, I started posing, you know, like a supermodel. A few of the men in the audience make wolf noises and chuckle, and this guy, she says, using an exaggerated Middle Eastern accent, says, I love America. And I said, that's because we're the best. She flips her blonde hair over her shoulder, and everyone claps and laughs. And somewhere, just across the street, on a world stage, we score another goal, with an Umar bomb, killing more children with a drone in another unnamed town, because we are the best. This one's called Our Neighbors Do Not Have the Right to Disturb Our Peace. It is late, nearly 11, and the plows are moving up and down this Brooklyn street. And you and I have been fighting, not about us, but about the plows and the wretched beeping until, sick of it, I pull on my boots, storm outside, through the snow of the biggest blizzard the city has seen in years, just after the last hurricane and 11 months before the next storm of the century that seems to happen every year. Hey, I yell, waving my arms at the men in the machines. Hey, hey. He looks down at me. How long are you going to be doing this? I ask. Arms folded against the cold that whips up the estuary. I sway, cold and a little bit drunk. What? He says. How long are you going to be doing this? It's late. He laughs. He points at all the snow as if it's obvious that the mayor won't rest until it's gone. He puts the truck in gear and the wretched beeping starts again. It's late, I reiterate, like a mother tired of her disobedient children. Some of us want to sleep, I say, even though all I want now is another scotch. Go to bed, he says. Nice pajamas, he adds. And they are fuzzy and pink, and they have little white skulls on them. And until now, I had completely forgotten that I was outside in my pajamas with no bra. He laughs again before dropping the plow against the concrete and making another pass at all that goddamn snow. I obey, but not before I pack one hard snowball and chuck it at his big bad machine. One little hit for the little guys in skull pajamas everywhere. This is called American Television. There was a lot in this book about American television. Like, it's really kind of sad that the major story that immigrants will tell each other in these books is that all we do is watch TV, which is probably true. So this is called American Television is the Ultimate Dispenser of Morals. Growing up, MTV used to play music videos, songs that shaped me, singers that I imitated, holding a fake microphone and a fake guitar, dreaming about being on tour, not knowing yet that I could not carry a tune. But that was the 80s, when the girls on my screen were older than me, with hard, cold stares that made me shiver, and I wanted to be just like them. Now there's reality television. Now they're 16 and pregnant, and on it, the girl weeps in the hospital bed as the contractions come, and the nurse tells her it's not time to push, tears sprouting out of her eyes, and she begs for drugs, for something, for God, yes, mostly for God. And then later, they show the boyfriend, his arms all loose and gangly, standing over her, holding that little white pearl of a baby, and he weeps, and thanks God. Before it's over, the narrator comes on and tells me that Brandy is naming her child Macy. And the postscript tells me that Macy is now the number one name for a baby in the US. And I think of all those girls out there standing before their televisions, and I don't know what they're holding, but it's not a fake microphone anymore. I'm just gonna do a couple more. This is called Americans Believe We Love Ourselves. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Americans believe we must love ourselves before we can love another. How does this happen? He asked me, dropping more wine into my glass. The newscaster is shaking her head, as if she's asking the same question as my husband. What is wrong with this country? He says it again, as if I or the cat have an answer. I watch the pictures flash before the screen, the young girl in Connecticut playing her guitar, trying on her prom dress. The camera cuts to the boys and girls, their arms draped off each other, their faces wet with tears. The rock they spray-painted purple for the girl who was stabbed in the hall on the morning of her junior prom for turning down the invitation of another boy. How does this happen? He says again, getting up and walking down the hall to the bathroom. It's like they don't give a shit. It's like they're so entitled. These boys, he says. What the fuck is wrong with these boys? And then this last one is called Competition is Ever Present in American Schools. They line us up against the padded back wall of the gym, the coach's sneakers squeaking on the floor as they roll the red rubber balls out in front of us, ping, ping, ping. They bounce and we scramble to get them so that when the whistle blows, we'll throw them as hard as possible at the heads of the children on the other side of the line. We pick off the weak, they hover in the back, pegging them hard in the spine when they turn to avoid our dominance. We'll slap five, we'll hoot and shout, we'll keep throwing that ball until we have decimated their team, cut down their numbers, ostracized them through pain. Whistles will blow again, and we'll line up for the water fountain, where it doesn't stop, this dominance, where the same ones who hovered in the back now try to drink water, and the same ones who threw the balls splash it in their faces. It helps us grow. That's what we say. Life is hard. This game is truth. It's played all over the world. Here, we call it dodgeball. In England, they call it bombardment. In Australia, poison ball. In Turkey, yakan tap, which means the ball that hurts. A very apt description. In Romania, they call it ducks and hunters. All across the world, burn ball, hit ball, two camps, this game keeps appearing. But I think that the Germans got it right, because when they line their children up against the wall and teach them how to win and how to run, they call it America. Thank you.